Trusted Voices is a Cognizant podcast series that aims to showcase the diversity of thoughts, backgrounds, and identity of our 350,000 associates all over the world. Trusted Disruptors is a special mini-series where we ask associates to reflect specifically on what it takes to build trust in the age of AI. Our focus will be on sustainability, transparency, data security, healthcare, global workforce, and more. The dialogue illustrates how we're building trust, especially when we show up diverse. We are super excited to have both of you with us on Trusted Voices. And before we jump into our conversation today, I wonder if each of you would just take a moment and briefly introduce yourself and share a little bit about what you do at Cognizant.
I'm Duncan Roberts. I work in Cognizant Research with Ollie. My kind of wheelhouse is researching, reading, writing, presenting about emerging technology and its effect on businesses, consumers, and how people can kind of prepare for the future about what's coming. So there's a lot of kind of throwing the net out wide, looking at what might happen in the next 5-10 years and making predictions, really.
I'm Ollie O'Donoghue, so I'm also part of the Cognizant research team. And I guess my wheelhouse, if we're the yin and yang of this operation where Duncan does all the really cool and interesting stuff, I use my industry analyst background to cover the boring stuff and try and bring it home to what it means to industry. We make a pretty good pair of partners in crime, actually.
All right. Well, picking up on the thread that you just shared about industries, you know, the two of you have just, you know, collaborated on a pretty, you know, landmark study that we've done in partnership with Oxford Economics, speaking to 3,000, you know, C-level folks across industries and sectors to really get a read on what generative AI is poised to disrupt and how, you know, over the next 10 to 20 years. And I'd love to start with, you know, really talking about some of what you saw in terms of its impact on specific sectors and how, you know, generative AI may have differing levels of impact as you look at, you know, different industry sectors and why, you know, why is it going to impact some areas more or less than others?
Well, let me give a little bit of background on the study, because I think what we have here is as a result of this big piece of work is a very unique point of view on how generative AI is shaping up out there. So Duncan and I and the Cognizant research team partnered with Oxford Economics to put it simply, we dug into the 18,000 tasks that power the US economy and the 1,000 jobs that those tasks ladder up to. And we went through a painstaking process where we had to figure out what's being automated by generative AI today and what we think will be automated by generative AI in 10 years' time, so around the 2032-2033 point. And you're right, there's huge, huge differences in industry adoption, right? That's one of the big takeaways that we walked away with. Now, some of them are quite, you know, common sense, I guess. So the information and tech sector, massive adoption over that 10-year period. I think just to look at one of our central scenarios, it moves from 3% now to 76.7% adoption by 2032, which is massive because it includes big companies and small companies and companies of all shapes and sizes. And the reason for that, I think, is quite obvious, right? So they're tech companies in the information sector, so they're used to this. They have a culture that enables them to pick up a technology and plug it in. In a lot of cases, they might have learned the hard way that, hey, here's the data we should not use, here's the data we should use, here's how we work with our customers and industry regulators and all sorts of bits and pieces like that. And then right at the other end of the spectrum, you have the sector, agriculture, forestry, fishing and hunting. And I think we can all pretty much figure out why generative AI adoption might be quite low there. There's, you know, when it comes to fishing, there's only so much of it that's kind of computer-based and paper-based that generative AI would play a significant role. And then somewhere in the middle, we have a range of different sectors that vary by adoption for a variety of reasons. But the biggest one, I think, is their regulatory environment. Or at least that's what it looks like to us when we modeled the adoption of enterprise software and a few other different scenarios to see what level and rate industries would pick up. So, for example, healthcare and social assistance is one of the sectors where you can imagine the regulations are quite high and the things that you can and can't do with patient data really limits the use cases that you can apply generative AI to and limits the rate of adoption in that sector as a result. And the same goes for areas like banking and financial services. But Duncan, you did kind of a little bit of digging into this space too. So I'll pause away from the boring data and hand over to the interesting guy.
We had to go through 1,800 of these kind of 18,000 individual tasks and say, is that going to be kind of assisted by generative AI, or is it going to be done by generative AI in its entirety? And for some tasks, it was really obvious, like Ollie says, you know, skinning a deer or you know, tasting apples. And then on the other end of the scale, kind of summarizing text or writing or creating basic artwork or stuff like that. You know, it was pretty easy to figure out. But there's a lot of gray area in between where we had to work with our SMEs, where we had to discuss. So I think the interesting thing here is that it wasn't necessarily industry specific. It was more kind of task based. You know, those tasks crossed industries. So what we're seeing is not a reflection on any one particular industry, but you know, an economy wide impact. And I think that's a really important thing to kind of take into account. And was it 90% of jobs are going to be impacted in some way? And when we say 90% of jobs, we don't mean 90% of jobs are going to be taken away by generative AI, but just they're going to have an impact. And you can imagine just using generative AI as a tool, there are so many jobs and tasks and roles that can be used, that it can be used with.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to think about, you know, some of the jobs that require much more human engagement and interaction, where it's more difficult for something like AI to step in, and then other roles where, you know, humans are going to need to potentially, you know, evolve our approach to figure out what is the piece that we still bring to the table when AI is an enabler or an assistant.
I think that's a really important point, right? Because this is something that Ollie and I debated at length on the many hours we spent kind of trawling through this spreadsheet and looking at the tasks. Was there were a bunch of tasks where we thought, well, it could do that, but are we going to want it to do that? You know, are we going to trust it to do that? And how much is human nature going to impinge on its kind of adoption there? And not just human nature, but business adoption generally, you know. And the best example of that was kind of education and teaching. How much do we want artificial intelligence to kind of educate our children and be part of the education system? And we had to set that aside to a certain point, because we were initially, at least, and I'll let Ollie explain how this works, but initially, at least, we were just looking at a very simple, can it do it? And if it can, we'll say there's an impact there. And then the next steps were to kind of look at those business adoption rates and how much it's going to be actually put in.
To jump on the education point, because that one is absolutely fascinating. And we ran a separate survey alongside it, actually, to cover some of these questions and find out kind of what is the tolerance of society for generative AI to just emerge and encroach into our lives in certain mm-hmm. circumstances. Now, it didn't necessarily impact some of the modeling we did. We just ran them in parallel out of curiosity. And I have some of the data up in front of me, but we asked questions like, hey, would you trust AI to babysit your kids? You know, and a very, very small proportion of people said yes to that.
They're probably currently using TV or an iPad to babysit their children anyway.
But there's a fascinating point because we ask, are you happy for them to educate your children? And that number is much bigger. Yeah. So it's kind of like, hey, when I'm on the hook, I don't trust it at all. But if teachers are using it, fine, that's cool with me. But it's still quite low, I have to say. I think a lot of people out there would say absolutely not. And the same for healthcare environments. Like, yeah, you know, would you trust generative AI in a variety of healthcare contexts? Most people would say probably not, actually. Or even though the technology has been kind of proven to deliver better results in a lot of different situations, that societal inertia pulls back the willingness for businesses to adopt, because, hey, in the current economic context, money's quite expensive. So what we invest in has to be worth it for us. That said, and Duncan, I think we can pick the bones of this all day long, because we've been deep into this research. But we do think adoption will be rapid across a variety of industries. And we think it'll happen in about three stages. The first, which is the one we're in now, everyone can sort of play a bit of a part in, because it's about experimenting. there's a big pullback for a lot of industries, which is like, hey, we don't really know what the regulatory environment is, so we don't want to spend a huge amount of money and then be told by the regulator, hey, guess what, you've got to unpick that. And, you know, in some cases, here's a big fine for your troubles. But a lot of organizations are experimenting. So even the highly regulated industries, we're seeing uptake where perhaps it's not organization-wide, but they're playing around with the technology and understanding it. We think once the regulatory questions have been answered, and some of those experiments bear fruit and society kind of gets used to the idea, then adoption speeds up rapidly over the next 10 years, well into our kind of, I think we end on a 30-year timeline where in our high scenario, close to 100% of businesses, so complete saturation of the economy really with generative AI.
Just to quickly, you know, add on to what you're talking about, how do you believe these, you know, areas that are going to be most impacted need to start strategizing and planning for the disruption that's coming? You know, I think we all know that, you know, Cognizant has just announced Synapse, you know, which is a program to, you know, reskill or scale 1 million people to be able to take advantage of generative AI. I imagine that's a piece of it. But what else do you see culturally and, you know, technology-wise needs to happen to prepare for this?
If you don't mind, Ollie, I'll kick off. I think, you know, obviously skilling, like education in general, is such an important point. This is a new technology to an extent. People need to understand it. They need to know how to use it because of the various risks that there are. And to get those productivity gains that we talk about in the report, you need to have that education. And because of the disruption that this is going to cause, I mean, the first step is just acknowledging that disruption, right? So many people say, oh, it's just used to augment human capability. Sure, but let's be honest here. There is going to be disruption. So plan for it and skill your people and get them ready for it. It's like any other technology project. I feel like I say that all the time. Yes, this technology is transformational, but think about those things that you do with any other technology project. You know, work on your culture, work on your skilling, educate your staff, bring them along with you on this project. So whereas there will be disruption, keeping the projects kind of human-oriented and a human-centered is really important, and making sure you understand that impact on them. I think, secondly, part of what I'm really interested in is the kind of the operating and business model changes that will go alongside this. As Ollie said, we are in that period of experimentation at the moment, and everybody's off looking at individual use cases here and use cases there. But at some stage, and very soon, somebody's going to build an entire functional, you know, profitable, massive business around this. And I don't mean the AI companies. I mean companies who are kind of implementing this as a tool. And their entire business will be kind of centered around the use of AI rather than just using it as a tool. The thing that people need to do is they need to plan and strategize for the future, because if your staff see just this experimentation and see the crazy things going on, new businesses turning up, businesses transforming, industries transforming, then they're not going to trust you as an organization that you're going to do this right. And they're not going to think that you have a position for them, etc. So make sure that you have that strategy and you have that longer term plan, even if we are in the experimentation stage at the moment. Look at this as not just a use case by use case, but how is it going to change your business? How is it going to change your industry? And how is it going to change your people? Ask those questions, build out that plan, and bring your staff along with you.
Yeah, I mean, the more encompassing conclusion that we ended up with was the need for a new trust compact, right? Which what you've described there, Duncan, is what powers it, right? So building that trust, and you see it with anything. It doesn't have to be technological change. It can be socio-political, whatever change. Trust isn't there amongst all of the core stakeholders that drive, whether it's employees or customers or leaders, whoever it is, then the whole thing falls apart incredibly quickly. Inertia kicks in and people drag their feet and adoption rates nosedive. No one uses the tech. You've wasted loads of money. What a bad idea. You know, all of those different kind of conflicting voices start moving in pretty quickly. Reskilling is that critical part for employees. But I think there needs to be a cold realism about the level of impact that the technology will have. And I think, Duncan, if you recall, as we went through it, there is a lot of tasks across the economy that can be fully automated by generative AI. Mm-hmm. There are very few roles, however, that can be fully automated by generative AI. A lot of them will have significant impact, but a lot of it will be assistive. So it'll help them do their day job, but you still need the human really to do that sort of work and complete those tasks. That said, no matter what, even if you explain that 100 times to everyone, leaders right through to employees, people jump to pretty quick conclusions, which is, I'm going to be out of work, so I'm unhappy, I don't trust this, I don't want to touch it. But also leaders sometimes jump to pretty wild conclusions where they say, well, guess what? I could, you know, maybe I don't need 30% of the people I have, or maybe I could make 30% more money with this technology. And there isn't really a plan in the middle for understanding what powers both of those activities. When we've moved through, and we've taken a couple of examples, really, I think a doctor's a great one. We've used examples like legal just to figure out what we think the impact is. And there's a lot of gray area between the 3% exposure score they have now, which, you know, effectively how many tasks are going to be hit by generative AI, and the 60, 70% we see in 10 years' time. And a lot of it is predicated on pretty substantial investment in the tools that those people use, whether or not it's a SaaS solution that suddenly built in some generative AI that they can now use to become more productive, whether it's a proprietary solution that enables them to mine data. Huge amount of groundwork before you hit that big exposure number, over a decade, and that's if you move at pace. So whilst I think there's a lot of disruption, I think being clear with everyone, leaders down to employees, that like, hey, here is the reality of this technology, right? You know, sure, it's quite, you know, scary for some people, but the reality is a lot needs to happen in that time. So a lot of building blocks need to fall into place for that disruption to happen in that 10-year period.
This is terrific. And actually, it's wonderful to hear because you're echoing some of the things that I heard recently. I was at a major Gen AI conference in Washington, D.C., and there were a lot of leaders like Sal Khan, for instance, from the Khan Academy was there. And they all were talking about, you know, the fact that and I'm paraphrasing, move away from responsible AI to responsible humans. At the end of the day, the decision is going to lie with the responsible humans using this correctly so that the jobs are impacted, but in a productive and meaningful way, not just like, oh, this is coming in, everybody leave, it knows what it's doing. It doesn't. The responsibility lies with the people at the end of the day.
What are you trying to use this for?
Correct.
I think is the other thing. So going back to that kind of business operating model question I was talking about, are you just using this to do your business as is, but make it a bit more efficient and cut a bunch of people? Okay. You know, you're just going to kind of make yourselves more efficient and keep the same business going. Somebody's going to come along and eat your lunch who changes the game and uses this technology to do that. So you need to think in those terms.
That's terrific. Like, are you using it to quantum leap or just incrementally benefit? I think that's a good way to look at it. So just moving ahead a little bit, a bit of a global perspective on this. One of the things at this conference is that they were talking about how generative AI and the proper use of Gen AI can help people in developing economies and things like that. One of the things we heard was that in some villages across the world, Gen AI is being used to help people who don't speak English and some of the main languages to translate things into very, very local dialects, and it's helping them generate paychecks and get work and things like that. I just wondered where you thought, like, how would the findings differ in a global context, specifically around developing economies?
So I think for me, one of the most interesting things that this technology does is it acts as a force multiplier for, I don't know if underdog is the right word, but mum and pop shop, small organization. And you see all over social media, individuals that operate like fairly large businesses because they have the right tool sets around them, of which generative AI plays a pretty big role. And I think that's important for businesses and individuals in the developing world, where they have this new tool set that enables them to transact in a very different way and operate, you know, implement sections of that operating model that Duncan talked about without needing to go out and hire hundreds and hundreds of people and do a variety of different things. That said, there are other challenges that I think need to be overcome in a lot of those areas. I mean, Duncan, we've talked a few about some of the infrastructure challenges, which I think you can dig into a little bit more. But one of my biggest kind of question marks around this is that we look at the economic potential of generative AI as if it's ChatGPT, which is to say kind of like the internet and relatively free and ubiquitous. And I don't necessarily think that's the future. I think a lot of it will be built in proprietary tool sets that you have to pay for, like SaaS tool sets, right? It's just the nature of things. Now, whether or not that adds a cost burden that makes it uneconomical suddenly for those individuals to compete the same way as the giants do, in much the same way enterprise software and enterprise technology did, remains a bit of a question. So I think I'm a cynical old analyst, right? So I find it very difficult to kind of go, yep, it's going to be an absolute game changer, because I think the reality is it's going to solve some problems in those communities and it should be a force for good. But at the same time, the rising tide lifts all boats, but some of those boats are already massive and go that little bit higher and that little bit faster.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has the potential, but then so did and does loads of other technologies, right, to do that. And we do see technology being a force for good, but we also see it kind of monopolized by other areas and not necessarily used in the right way. So I think it's less about the technology itself and more about the way in which we deliver it and the way in which we kind of spread that opportunity to other people. Because I think there are infrastructure challenges too. You know, we can't expect generative AI on its own to make a huge difference if there aren't the other technologies and the other kind of backups to do that. We talk about how do you get generative AI ready? You need to do X, Y, Z. Well, then everybody else needs to do X, Y, Z too. Yeah. And they stand at a considerable disadvantage to the developed economies already. So there's more to do than just generative AI. But yeah, if we can do all of those other things, then it should be massively beneficial.
So I wanted to ask you, what is the one thing personally that excites you about Gen AI and one thing personally that keeps you up at night?
God, this is where you find out how dull I am. So like, I mean, genuinely, I know this is a terrifying concept for the creators out there, but I what I find really interesting about generative AI is it being baked into different media formats, right? I, as a consumer of those media formats, can have a different experience. So, and this is where I'm so dull, I'm so sorry. In computer games, for example, where you can have a conversation effectively with some of the other characters that isn't based on a really basic kind of decision-making tree. So that I'm excited about. The bit that terrifies me as someone who spends most of his day writing is the bit where it can write better than me. Like that is a concern. And if I were given the option, like the saboteurs of old, I would throw my clog into the machinery if it looked like it was going to do it any better than I did, which I think it already can.
So a couple of things on the keeps me up, and loads of things keep me up at night. But I would say proliferation of content, right? So I think just the sheer amount of stuff that people can create kind of devalues what you'll see. So I'm getting old, but I don't necessarily really want to read a book that's being entirely created by generative AI. I don't really want to watch a film. I don't want to listen to music. And I just worry that finding good stuff will just become unbelievably hard. And the internet will just become even more kind of dirty and horrible than it already is. And fraud will prevail, and, you know, governments will fall and we'll all live in this kind of horrible dystopia. So I've gone from reading books to Armageddon, which is nice. So, but then what excites me, I think, is just having, if we can use it in the right way, having that help to really do things that you might want to do, but have never had the time or the capability to do, you know. Like I do a lot of writing. I'm not actually a very good writer. I need a lot of help. I need a lot of editorial help. So this has helped me kind of leapfrog a little bit there. I do some hobbyist coding. I've done that in the past. This is helping me kind of do some work in that front. And I'm just experimenting with it and creating things and doing things that otherwise I wasn't able to do. So that's really exciting. But if we see that happen on a massive scale and then just spew out into the internet, it will be difficult. I think.
Thank you, both of you. This has been so terrific.
Really exciting, a little bit scary. But I think, you know, overall, I think it's important to think about these things and to have this information, and really great to hear you both reflect on it. And we'll check back in with you in 6 months and see what's changed.